And I was once on a German talk show, and if you want to go on one, it's a lot of fun. It's really fun. And I was on this German talk show, and this woman said to me, she said, "Mr. Williams, why do you think there's not so much comedy in Germany?" And I said, "Did you ever think you killed all the funny people?" And here's where it got interesting. She didn't bat an eyelash, she just went, "No." At that point, even God's going, "Do you get it?"
Willkommen, meine Damen und Herren, zu einer Episode über unser glorreiches Vaterland. Mein Name ist Brace Belden.
I'm Liz.
Und
we are, of course, joined by producer Young Chomsky.
Uber-producer Young Chomsky. And our podcast is called True Anon.
Jesus. You went into Austrian right there.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to True Anon.
Hello. How are you guys doing? Willkommen to
Willkommen.
Willkommen to the Uber Dance Club. It's crazy. So I've been thinking. Actually, I'll say this. Let's back up even farther. To several days ago, to about a week ago.
Okay.
But we've been talking about doing this episode for a long time.
Yeah.
And have kind of been like researching stuff here and there, but we really, really got like started on this pair of episodes about a week ago in earnest. And I got to tell you, I have been in the hole.
The trenches.
The trenches. Well, that was, of course, where I was made a man. Mm. On the Western Front of World War
One,
and also where I got a fantastic gay blowjob from Ernst Junger. But I got to tell you, I have been in the German mindset.
Oof.
I've been waking up at the crack of dawn. I have had my
daily floggings,
a wispily thin twink shitting on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken ecstasy at about 9 a.m.
So that you could complete your art direction portfolio.
For Nike?
For Nike's.
Adidas?
Yeah. For Nike's, the consultant gig you're getting through Nike, but mm-hmm. for the European Commission.
Absolutzen. And then after that, at around 9:30, of course, I eat mein breakfast, which consists of one black coffee and about 45 sausage links.
Sure.
Sort of fed to me one by one mm-hmm. by various completely latex-clad amorphously gendered
dog mask
individuals.
Yeah. And you're being walked.
I'm being walked. Yeah. It's the dog, because that's the classic German. That's the German joke. It's who's walking who when they see a dog and a person walking.
Okay.
And then, of course, around noon, I go to the dance club, and I stay there until about 4 a.m. where I come back and I do more graphic design work.
Yes.
And then, of course, what I do is I go through the Instagram posts of various Arab, Turkish people who've moved to mein city, Berlin, and I try to find anything that maybe is a little too pro-Palestine. Palestine?
A little spicy, and not in a curry-versed kind of way.
No. In a way that I find distasteful.
Which is how I find currywurst.
I've never had it.
I don't get it.
German food is just not my business.
I had to say, there's this this thing that Brecht said about Germans. And you got to take it from him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Big Brecht himself.
And he was like, you know, the gap between someone like Goethe
mm-hmm.
and the average, let's say, sausage-eating German
yes.
is so much wider than the gap between, say, Voltaire and the average Frenchman. Brecht himself did not
particularly have much love for
a
the Germans.
A high esteem of his countrymen.
I will say this. I hold the German, the Hun, in both high and low regard.
Okay.
And a high regard because, like, hey, listen, a lot of other guys tried it. You guys finally did it. You got a lot of us. I got to give you that. They've been trying it for millennia. You guys did it. But also, they're industrious peoples. They're weird in a unique way. And I do think genuinely that things would have been different if the Soviets had gotten over the Vistula.
See, my problem with them starts at unification.
Yes.
Not reunification.
Unification. No. Unification is the problem.
I had no problem with them before.
You didn't have a problem with the various German, like, baronies and statelets?
No, you know what I say? None of my business.
None of my business. Whatever you guys got going on there, all good.
Yeah, Bismarck, that's where it all starts.
I will say this. I've kind of been on this for the past few days with you, is that, like, we did a fake-ass denazification effort in the, like, months after World War II that was given up.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
quickly.
You and me.
We did this, with each other.
Uh-huh.
But
that's our struggle session was actually.
It really should have been the Junker mindset and, like, the Prussian.
Yeah, you're on the whole Prussian thing.
I hate, that's a big problem with is the Prussianism. Mm. This military mindset, bureaucratic, very conservative mindset that I would say has poisoned the well since the 1871.
Yeah.
And before, but really, like, that is a lot of it can be traced back to that. Why are we talking about Herr Vaterland right
well,
now?
I was just going to say, this is not und history podcast.
No, nine. It is not nine. It's nine history. It's history extend.
This isn't like when we're doing the 8-part series on, you know, how the Germanic tribes all came together and then, you know, everything that went wrong since then, which is basically everything.
Everything.
It's not that. Why are we talking about Germany? Well, we named this series What's Up with Germany.
What's Up with Germany?
And I've got some questions. And in fact, I think a lot of Americans, we'll say a lot of Americans on the left, on the liberal left, have a lot of questions about what's going on in Germany. Because there's been a lot of very freaky news coming out of there. And I don't mean from, you know,
the Bergheim?
Yeah.
That is, you could not, with a machine gun pointed at me and a yellow star on my damn shoulder, you could not march me into Bergheim in any circumstances.
I gotta say, you really don't hear that much about Berlin as a, like, the cool spot to go to anymore. Like, maybe it's just because I know I'm old, but, like, I'd say 10, 15 years ago,
that was like where
everyone was like, oh, I graduated art school. Now I got to go really get my bearings
where,
in Berlin.
Like,
I can pay $200 and work for, you know.
Nike.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's funny because it was always like people who were moving to Berlin were always like people who were like really hipster style people that I would like be like friends of friends or something like that. Mm-mm. None of my friends ever moved there when we were younger. And all I sort of knew about it was that if you were a punk band and you were touring there, I never toured Europe, but all my friends' bands that did would come back and be like, man, I played some squat in not Berlin, but like maybe Berlin or Hamburg or any of these places. Like, it was weird because they had like a giant Israeli flag on the wall. And like they were, and Germans were also notorious for coming up to you after you played for 30 minutes, which is too long for a band to play for usually, and being like, I did not like your set, but you played for too short. And like that was always like the picture I had of Germans. But in the past, the past several years, but especially acutely since October 7th, a string of astounding news stories have come out of Deutschland relating to the repression of pro-Palestinian activists or Arabs in general and the sort of hysteria, the philo-Semitic hysteria that has gripped much of the German political class.
So real quick, before we get into this, can you, for myself and for our listeners, define Philo-Semitism?
So, you know anti-Semitism?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll have you know this. Anti-Semitism was actually a loan word from German, which I think was antisemitismus, which they literally invented the word anti-Semitism, if not the concept, I think in the 1800s. But Philo-Semitism is, it's funnily enough, very much related because I think it kind of comes from the same weird place. It is a... like a valorization, an obsession, a positive obsession with the Jew instead of the negative obsession with Jewish people.
I see.
And Germans, and particularly the German government, is very, very much known for this. I mean, you see it a lot in, like there's that one legless motherfucker in Congress who with the like wears his IDF uniform in, who was not Jewish. And like we have our own kind of version here right. that is very much branded like evangelical.
Sure.
In Germany, it is sort of, it is almost like a state ideology
yes.
that a lot of people subscribe to. And so it puts on to the Jews like a unique place in history, which, you know, we do have, but not in the way that they think. And becomes this sort of like flip side of anti-Semitism. Which really culminates in just like an obsessive view of the Jews as like this weird moral force in the world. Yeah, I think also just to put like a little more of like a personal aspect to this as well. You know, my maternal side of my family are Polish or sort of Eastern European Jews, Polish-Ukraine border. And they moved to the U.S. in the like early 20th century. But my grandfather was part of the liberation of Buchenwald and his like papers and all that stuff in the Holocaust Memorial like archive in D.C. And he made friends. Like, there's all these photos of him with these Jewish French prisoner that a POW that he liberated or was met during the liberation. But it's like a very real possibility that if my family had stayed there, then they would have, of course, been wiped out, right?
Yeah.
And like obviously, I don't have a ton of stuff on the early lineage of that side of my family. But it's like I'm pretty sure that anybody who did was very likely that they were killed. And so it's like this isn't completely foreign stuff to me.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of family in Poland that died in the invasion. My grandfather actually made it out, and. Somehow, I mean, it's the craziest story. I don't know exactly if he went through Romania or how he got out of there, but he ended up basically on foot with some friends traveling through Europe and ending up in England and joining the RAF. And he was a pilot for a pretty elite, I guess you would call it squadron, for the RAF, a kind of famous like cell of Polish fighter pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shot down over France, and this family found him in the woods and gave him clothes and burned his papers and hid the plane and hid him from the Nazis. And he stayed in the woods for like 20 days while this family would come and bring him food and water every couple of days. And, trying to keep the Nazis away from him. And then someone in the town ratted on them. And the Nazis came and they captured him, my grandfather. And then they shot everyone that had protected him. And so there's kind of a weird, it's hard to think about.
You think that these people
were fucking murdered for, protecting my grandfather, who then was thrown in a camp for 3 years where he was, and then he was a part of the Black March and fell in the snow because his feet were frozen, and the man next to him carried him for the rest of the way, and that's how he was finally able to make it out, which is to say, like, a lot of people are not here because my grandfather was, which is a very tough thing for me and my family to kind of sit with.
I mean, some of this I feel like I really need to say because in Germany, in the climate today, and really in the climate for the past couple of decades, if you have reservations about the way that Germany as a state views Jewish people.
Yeah.
Or the relationship on a state-to-state level between Germany and Israel. Or Israel's relationship with Palestinians. You will be labeled almost unconditionally an anti-Semite.
Yes.
You know, in the past several months, or I guess more than almost 6 months now, since October 7th, there have been so many incidents of not just Palestinians or Arabs or Turks or Germans being called anti-Semites at sometimes by government agencies, but Israeli Jews being labeled as anti that are in the diaspora, I guess, well, I don't know if called diaspora, but have moved to Berlin or Germany and who have protested Israel's treatment of Palestinians have been called anti-Semites. This is a fraught fucking issue over there.
Yeah.
And there is a blanket of repression over talking about any of this stuff, not even in like an upfront way like you might be used to in, you know, maybe with your friends or in political groups here, but in a way that like even in a halfway way. I mean, there's a concept of BDS adjacent in Germany now, which is – it is – a sort of web of repression that has spun itself over Germany and I genuinely do not think has gotten nearly enough coverage in the West because – or not in the West, excuse me, but in the States. But it is truly astounding and it's fraught especially in the German context because of their history with the Jews.
Mm.
And not only because of that but because of the Jews' history with Germany, you know, this strange negative symbiosis, as it's been called sometimes, and we kind of want to talk through some of that stuff and figure out what the fuck is going on with Germany.
So to set the scene a little bit, I mean, you mentioned the kind of scale of repression that's going on right now. I also want to mention that Germany has by far the largest Palestinian diaspora in Europe. There's about, I think, 300,000 Palestinians in Germany, much more than in any other country.
Yeah.
By far. And that's an important part of the kind of trying to, you know, convey the environment and, you know, kind of what's going on over there. Since October 7th, no European country has gone further in targeting pro-Palestinian solidarity voices. Everything from marches, schools are banning, like, any kind of flag, mm-hmm. any kind of sign. You can't wear a keffiyeh. Facebook posts are being, like, extremely watched. Any kind of social media posting at all. There have been handful of stories. There was one just last week of, like, a 41-year-old woman getting raided by the police for posting from the river to the sea on Facebook.
And these police raids can sometimes involve, like, hundreds of police officers.
Yes, to make a statement.
Exactly. Yeah, everything is taken out of the person's house. Like, they're all in armor. And, you know, these are generally over social media posts.
Yes. You know, and in this climate, you know, let's remember that Germany continues to block any kind of European nation from calling for a ceasefire, mm-hmm. right? There was Die Welt, the newspaper. I mean, you're going to hear a lot of really bad German accents, by the way.
Let's actually, you know what, Liz? Let's say this right here. I'm sorry, Germans. Your language, it's tough on the ears. No disrespect, but slight disrespect. And listen, we have Jews kind of have an adjacent language, Yiddish. Also, not so easy on the ears, but a little more charming. We're going to mispronounce a lot of stuff, but here's the thing. You can pronounce a word any way you like. It's a free country, unlike yours.
Yeah, yes, totally. Die Welt. They fucking came out and they were like, "Free Palestine means Heil Hitler."
Yes,
that's the like level that we're talking about.
That is what we're talking. And so a lot of other European countries, right after October 7th, were like, "We're going to ban Palestinian flags and protest." Blah 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 blah. A lot of this stuff, the fear has kind of cooled in those countries.
Mm.
In Germany, it has only ramped up further and further and further.
Yeah. Nicaragua, of course, recently also sued Germany at the ICJ for funding Israel and cutting off aid to UNRWA. They are accusing them basically of being a party to the ongoing genocide in Palestine. And, you know, I think that's an important part to mention here as well.
Namibia's president, too, has also spoken out against Germany's unyielding support of Israel at the ICJ. He said he had, quote, deep concern that Germany would support Israel in the ICJ case, unable to draw lessons from its horrific history. He said Germany cannot morally express commitment to the United Nations Convention Against Genocide, including atonement for the genocide in Namibia, while supporting the equivalent of a Holocaust and a genocide in Gaza. So a little background on that. Between 1904 and 1908, German colonial forces killed 70,000 in Herero and Nama. The UN calls it the 20th century's first genocide. And it's funny because Germany is sort of thought of as like the European country that was like, oh, we're all pissed off because we missed out on the colonial expansion thing. But in like the little bits of colonialization they did do, they were like, well, we're going to make up for this by killing as many people as possible.
Yeah, the repression mindset. Like
exactly.
Beyond the repression from the state, I think what's shocked a lot of people on the left, you know, both within Germany, greater Europe, whatever you want to say, is the kind of swift and immediate response from pretty much everyone in the German cultural institutions,
yes.
Whether it's like within the arts, within the museums, within the academies, like all the – Germany has a lot of cultural institutions. It should be said also German cultural institutions are very well funded by the state.
Yes, that is something to be really, really pressed down upon is that,
yeah.
That the state funds a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there's a pretty famous incident from December of last year when Masha Gessen wrote an essay in The New Yorker comparing Gaza – very explicitly comparing Gaza to the Nazi Jewish ghetto. They were about to accept an award, which, I mean, ironically or not, I mean, you know, the Hannah Arendt prize for political thought. They were supposed to accept this award in Germany. And after the publication, the foundation giving them the award and the space where they were supposed to accept the award, like, withdrew the support immediately and had to come out very, very, like, demonstrably against them and against this essay and against the comparison.
I think this, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but the issue of comparing the Holocaust to something else in Germany is a much bigger deal than it is in any other country. By far. It is like the relativization, they call it, of the Holocaust is like akin to Holocaust denial.
Yeah, I would say they view it basically
Thing. Yeah, it basically is the same thing.
Yeah.
And which has its own crazy implications from that. And like, which somebody who is maybe not German would be like, that is actually a psychotic thing to ever say. But
yeah.
It's very much in the interest of both the Germans and the Israelis to make the Holocaust this sort of very much singular, unreplicable or replicable, but as of yet unreplicated event in history.
Yeah. Last month, too, at the Berlinale Film Festival, there was a Palestinian filmmaker, Basil Adra, who won the documentary prize for this film, No Other Land. And in his speech, he said, "It is very hard for me to celebrate when there are tens of thousands of my people being slaughtered and massacred by Israel in Gaza." Now, here's the twist. The film was actually co-directed with an Israeli filmmaker, Yuval Abraham. And the, you know, the documentary focuses on the displacement of Palestinians in the West Bank. And Abraham was, twist, on stage, you know, accepting the award at the same time and said, this is from Yuval Abraham, "In 2 days, we will go back to a land where we are not equal. I am living under civilian law and Basil under military law. We live 30 minutes from one another. I am free to move where I want in this land. Basil, like millions of Palestinians, locked in occupied West Bank. The situation of apartheid between us, this inequality, it has to end." Now, this was a joint statement, the two of them on the stage together, mm-hmm. saying this about a film that they made together about what's going on in the West Bank. And the Chancellor of Germany, who we will talk about a lot in these two episodes, Olaf Scholz, he comes out and he said that saying this, that this entire statement was unacceptable because you cannot allow such a, quote, one-sided stance.
That's so you. I've been hearing that so much lately. One-sided stance.
There's two people up there.
There are two people up there. But it's in the context specifically of German pushback against Palestinians. You always hear, and in fact, I saw this phrase earlier today. A one-sided stance, and the context in which I saw it earlier today was in regards to this pamphlet. This pamphlet called Myths of 1948, put out by this foundation in Germany, which has been distributed to schools in a predominantly Palestinian neighborhood in Berlin. This is not made by an official German government organization. Many of the people who are contributors to this are writers for the Free Press, Barry Weiss's publication, Quillette, Brookings Institution, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it is essentially a revisionist history of the founding of Israel that places not only some of the blame for the Holocaust on the Grand Mufti, which is a figure always see trotted out by this kind of by these kind of people.
Can you explain who that is?
Grand Mufti was this guy who was I believe he was appointed by the British, who was like supposed to be the leader of the Arabs in Palestine,
right?
And who had a relationship with Hitler. I think he lived in Berlin during World War II. And probably, I'm sure, did not like Jewish people, but has, and there's a few photographs of him with Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. But, you also have to take this into the context of, like, Hitler was attempting, or the Axis in general actually attempted, because they did this with India and they did this in Africa as well. They would try to kind of co-opt local leaders of places in the British colonies in order to foment rebellions against them.
Yes.
It rarely, I mean, they did this in Iraq. They did this basically everywhere.
Right.
It rarely
worked. As a strategy against the British Empire.
It's also like the Lawrence of Arabia kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like they would send their sort of Arabists out or their, their Indian specialists out to these places to kind of recruit, people who would fight against the British there. They were not entirely successful in Palestine, this relationship that the Grand Mufti had with Hitler has been transformed over the years into essentially the implication that he gave Hitler the idea for the Holocaust. And this pamphlet does precisely that, but it's all shit like, it essentially is a revisionist history of the founding of Israel in order to, in total, deny the mass expulsion of Palestinians from their homes in 1948. And it's being distributed in all these schools there. And it's astounding to me because in this has not been gone unnoticed. A lot of people have protested against this. And in fact, an Israeli Jew who now lives in Berlin was beaten at the launch event for this, which took place in an anti-Deutsch bar. People who posted about it were threatened with lawsuits by the group that put it out. I mean, this is a pamphlet that the CDU, Christian Democratic Union, and the SPD government are putting into schools with Palestinians where you are not allowed to wear a Palestine flag or a keffiyeh or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you are going to read this pamphlet from a writer for the fucking Free Press.
Yeah, I mean, besides this, the story about the pamphlet, I mean, we've been talking about a lot of instances that have made it to the American press, basically.
Yeah.
But we were talking with a friend of yours who is in Berlin and who lives in a majority Palestinian neighborhood and does a lot of organizing work there.
Yes.
And just talking to her about the situation and the stuff that hasn't made it into the press is pretty shocking. Just the kind of environment, the atmosphere that she describes. I mean, stories of like the police being aggressive with kids, teachers being aggressive with kids. I don't know how many details we want to get into, but I would just say that, we're trying to impart on our dear listeners that the situation in Berlin is fucking insane.
Yeah, we've conducted a lot of interviews over the past week with various people who live in Germany and have various positions that are related to this kind of stuff. I'll probably get more into that in the second episode. But yeah, I mean, I'm my dear old friend of mine lives in Berlin, lives in this Palestinian neighborhood, and works with this Palestina campaign, which I think used to be called Nakba 75. Mm-hmm. And we talked to her for a couple hours, I guess day before yesterday, and it was, I mean, the stuff that she's been sending us during that and since then has been truly extraordinary, the level of repression and just sheer German-style insanity coming out of Germany.
So all this is to say that it's ripe for a good old-fashioned true-non investigation into why the fuck Germany is the way it is.
Well, 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 you made it to the end of the preview, the extended preview, and I bet you're curious about what happens next. Well, guess what? You can go to patreon.com/trueanonpod. You can go to patreon.com/trueanonpod.
Do you not know it?
What am I typing that in for, you know?
What? I type it in every day.
Okay, well, I don't. I type in the P
it's
and
your
it
homepage.
Fills in the rest of it.
You
on
have it
the,
set to your homepage. That's so cute, Brace.
What are you talking about? Set to
great.
My homepage.
You I don't have it set to your homepage.
If you think I know how to set something to my homepage or I have something set to my homepage, you are out of your mind.
I think that you understand computer, okay?
I understand computer, but you don't understand. Yesterday, I wore jeans and a jacket from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed.
You slept in jeans?
No, but I put on jeans first thing in the morning. Things are different for me than other people. I wear a jacket zipped up to here. This jacket zipped up to here.
Brace wear a jacket zipped up like this.
I do wear a jacket zipped up to that. But you know what I'm saying? Even when I'm relaxing and lounging in my bed, I wear the jeans in the bed. I wear the jacket
what?
In the bed. Yeah, I do, okay?
That's
I don't know what to tell you.
Crazy.
That's not crazy to wear jeans in bed.
I need to get you a pair of cozies.
I know. I'm not going to say what I think of that, but I don't – if a guy is at home and he wants to wear – wait, first of all, there's a free trial. There's a free – fucking Liz is distracting me. Here's the thing. If you want to hear it, there's a free trial on patreon.com/trueanonpod.
Jeffrey Epstein.